SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, and enjoy. Petey Miller's, he's very fun, and he's is high energy. Is that a fair word? he's high energy. That is a good description, right? Yeah, I think that's fair. It's an amazing. I'll ask John White when we get him. Looking at these two records side by side, Stormy Liberal and Roy H. Roy H. started his year in the Palos Verdes, beat three. That's the grade two. Then he went to Dubai, finished third to Mind Your Biscuits and XY Jet. Beaten less than a length, and he didn't break good. Came back, had the summer start down at Del Mar in the Bing Crosby, and got beat by Ransom the Moon, and then won the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, beating four, including Stablemate Distinctive B and Ransom the Moon, who, as it turns out, was on the verge of getting hurt and retiring. Stormy Liberal, though, went to Hong Kong at the end of the year in December, so that doesn't count. Came back in the Daytona and found himself chasing his stablemate home, Conquest Tsunami. So that's how he started the year. Then he went to Dubai, gets beat a half length by Jungle Cat. In a bit of an upset, and came back, then went to New York. He gets points for going to the Jiper, and got beat. He ended up sixth in there, actually, but was only beaten two lengths by Disco Partner. Again, Conquest Tsunami, Pure Sensation, etc. And then went on the second half of the year run, wins an allowance. Wins the Green Flash, and wins the Eddie D, and then wins the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. So I don't know why do we think necessarily that? I guess that Roy H has got, he's got the traditional dirt sprint season resume. Let's see what John White thinks. He joins us now. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Well, one thing that I think is the two absolutely phenomenal training jobs this year, one by Peter Miller and another by John Gosden. For Peter Miller, this is going to go down to me as absolutely astounding to win two Breeders' Cup races, the same two races, but at two different tracks in back-to-back years. I mean, that is just absolutely tremendous. And then John Gosden, when you realize, and of course you've got to have the filly to do it with Enable, but to win a second arc with only that one prep race under her belt on a synthetic surface in England, and then to win the arc, and then to win the Breeders' Cup in only her third start of the year, and be out in the parking lot like that. I mean, what a great filly, and I don't use that word very often, great, but that is one great filly for sure. And she lived up to the billing as something extraordinary in terms of a filly. And, you know, John Gosden won that first Breeders' Cup mile with Royal Heroine, who was certainly something special, but this Enable is one of the ones for all time for sure. So I thought those were just two stupendous training achievements by John Gosden, a European now trainer who, of course, trained in Southern California here in the early 1980s, and Peter Miller, you know, and right after the Breeders' Cup, well, in fact, during the Breeders' Cup, when Peter Miller got that second one, and so he had the back-to-back wins, I mentioned to my wife, I said, wow, I said, these are geldings, and the Breeders' Cup's here at San Anita next year. It's certainly not far-fetched to think there would be the possibility that Peter Miller could do it again. So it was interesting for me to hear you in the discussion with Peter kind of along those lines. I liked it when you said if you had to have a future book for the turf sprint, you certainly would want to go with Stormy Liberal, and I can't really argue with that with his record.
Well, down the hill. I mean, the uniqueness of the course, which is, you know, it's been proven repeatedly that, you know, that it... Yeah, you know, it's a big advantage, obviously,
yep.
To be local for that. So Miller, really, I know Petey can be a bit of a divisive topic among horse players and so forth. And this is a undeniable success to. You know, to do this in two different racing jurisdictions, and two completely different courses, you win at home. And he said it. He said it himself. And the fact that he ships out, you know, to all these different places, to New York and to Dubai and tried Hong Kong, and you know that he's willing and confident. And of course, that also speaks to to the whole team. The Hartoonian operation as well needs to be acknowledged.
Well, when you think about it, Peter Miller's one of the great shipping trainers of all time because he ships on a regular basis from San Luis Rey Downs to Santa Anita or Del Mar or Los Alamitos and formerly Hollywood Park, and he's done so successfully. So, you know, he's got that nice, quiet place where he's got most of his horses at San Luis Rey. But, you know, it's not easy when they're all having to ship all the time, and yet Peter has done so with an enviable record. So, and I couldn't have been, you know, I was so tickled for John Sadler, who I've known going back to 1981. And, you know, you talk about a class act. I mean, you knew the guy was going to be peppered with these, you know, by the media for the being shut out. I wouldn't have blamed him if he would have decided to go into a disguise to try to, you know, not be recognized, to kind of lie low.
He's a little tall. He's a little tall for that,
well,
John.
That's true. That is true.
He's about your height, right? He's got to be your height.
Yes, he is. And I certainly would. But, you know, he never ducked the issue. I remember at one point earlier this year, he even said, well, look, Susan Lucci finally got an Emmy. You know, and that he just handled this with such class and such grace. And, you know, between John Sadler and Ronus Racing, who I've talked about time and time again on your show, but you cannot help but root for both of them, Ronus Racing as an owner and John Sadler as a trainer, because these are just first-rate individuals. I mean, both Ronus brothers, but especially Costa, who is the guy that we hear, you know, in the media the most, and he's just such a likable guy. Look, what a year Accelerate had, and that's a pretty darn good training feat, too, for John Sadler in terms of having Accelerate march through this campaign and keep at such a high level from early in the year all the way here into November. So, you know, and you look at his only defeat, and it was the City of Light, and that defeat doesn't look quite as bad now anyway after City of Light wins the Dirt Mile, so... you know, just some really good stuff at the Breeders' Cup this year. And, you know, it was interesting for me to hear you discussing how to approach it as a horse player. Because one thing I've tried to do in more recent years, you know, I've been absolutely annihilated as a bettor sometimes at these Breeders' Cups. It's not that hard to do. I mean, you can really go into it and get buried. And so I try to approach it, you know, where I'm not trying to absolutely, win the lottery, so to speak, you know, win a huge amount of money. But that said, I went into this Breeders' Cup, and there were three horses that I had the intention of betting and betting heavily. The first one was Improbable, who wasn't in any of the Breeders' Cup races, but right. That was going to start my Breeders' Cup weekend off. So that was step one. Step two was to make my biggest bet of the year by far on newspaper or record. As far as I was concerned, and I said it on your show in the lead-up, I think she's better than Lady Eli. I really do. I don't know how good she is. I mean, I start just being speechless when you just watch her run. I mean, they say freak. I mean, she's like a young female man of war on turf or something. I don't know. I mean, she's just scary. And I knew she'd be a short price, but if you make a huge wager, you're going to do okay as long as she doesn't lose. And the minute she came out of the gate, there wasn't one instant in that race I felt she was going to lose. Then I made my second biggest wager of the entire year on Enable. And now that one, I did have some some sweaty palms at points in the race, but... like I say, what a great filly she is. So that turned out well. And then the only other horse I actually bet on, because he was 3-1 going to the gate. And this is where I can tell you, Steve, I have such respect for Thoroughgraph. Thoroughgraph, this is one of their situations to where when you look at the Thoroughgraph sheets, you realize that going into the race, City of Light is the fastest horse in the race, not Catalina Cruiser. Now, you have to be careful because Catalina Cruiser was undefeated and untested. So, you know, there was the possibility that Catalina Cruiser could still step up and win that race. But the key is that really, if you go by the sheets, City of Light's the horse that should have been the favorite. You know, in other words, it was flip-flopped. And I kept looking at that 3-1, 3-1, 3-1, and I said, you know what, you got to sign me up. So it wasn't a big bet, but he dipped down at the 5-2 going into the gate, which kind of irked me a little bit. And and he actually, paid 720, so it wasn't even like a 780 where he was close to 3-1. So he took a lot of money right there, right at the end. But and I'm so happy again. Here's another guy that you just had on earlier today, Michael McCarthy. I mean, this guy... has done such a good job. He's had such a good year, and he's such a good guy. He just is. And there's so many people here in Southern California rooting for the guy, and he is really putting together quite an operation there. I mean, he had a strong representation this year at this Breeders' Cup, and I think it's only the tip of the iceberg of what we're going to see from Michael McCarthy going forward.
Agreed. And for him to bring five horses to Breeders' Cup when he only trains less than three dozen, I mean, that's remarkable. And he was, he was very, I would say, self-effacing about it. It just worked out. And that nonsense. I mean, it more than just worked out. He had to make adjustments, paved. There was a portion of the year where it didn't look like paved was really... getting better as she aged, and he managed to move her forward to get her going. And granted, she and Lean the Charmer got on a turf course that was deeper than anything he's ever he's ever set foot on. So, but everybody else, no complaint about the way everything else went, including the. Very good effort by Vibrance. John, let's actually touch on some other areas, beside the ones, the races that you keyed in on from a betting standpoint, some impressions overall, and I suppose, Accelerate and the Classic. I'd love to get, your reaction to the way the race unfolded, and I made the point yesterday, I find the chart fascinating, that it literally down the chart alternates between horses that attended the pace and horses that came from off the pace, one after the other, and it feels like a race that is just a textbook chart for understanding pace and how horses can impact races and what the challenge is for a horse like Gunavera. Because a case could be made that if Catholic Boy had not had trouble early and been taken out of the race, that he would have added to the pace, which, who knows, might have made, you know, the things go a little, prompted a little bit more. And is there a potential in that scenario that Accelerate has to go faster at a different point in the race and is more susceptible to the closer late than he turned out to be? So everything that could go on in a classic distance race pretty much happened.
Well, in my selections, I took a stand against Accelerate, but the one thing I did wisely was back when Justify, the day they announced he had a filling in a leg, I thought, you know what, you better not dilly-dally here. You better get as quickly as possible some future book bets before these prices plummet on live horses. Because they didn't announce Justify was retired at that time. It took a fair amount of time before they announced the retirement. But I knew that once he was retired, you certainly were going to see the prices drop significantly on horses in the future books. So there were three horses I played virtually right after they announced that Justify had a problem. And the first one was McKenzie, who was sitting in a beautiful spot early in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and he just faltered. The second one was Good Magic, who I didn't get to the Breeders' Cup, but the third one was Accelerate because he was 12-1. So I put $250 on Accelerate right then and there at that time, thinking that I'll bet you're not going to get anywhere close to 12-1 on Accelerate if he gets all the way to the Breeders' Cup. So that was the one smart thing I did there. And, Gunavera, I mean, I got to say, I always look at him and kind of look at him as someone that's a threat to pop in there at a big price, and he does do so. I mean, he's a pretty darn nice horse. There's just no getting around it. So, it was disappointing for both McKenzie and West Coast was a disappointment, and Accelerate, to have this campaign of these mile and a quarter wins in grade one races, I mean, it's a stellar campaign for sure. So now while Baffert had his disappointment there, certainly he's got to be smiling because not only did Improbable win impressively, as I thought he quite possibly might in the street sense, but Game Winner was very impressive, I thought, at winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I mean, That's a serious horse. There's no doubt about it. Now he's got that win at Churchill under his belt, and it looks like a mile and a quarter is going to be just a wonderful fit for him. And also Jaywalk. You know, I mean, this is a really terrific filly. Who had run faster when she won the Frisette than Complexity did when he won the Champagne. I mean, that's a very nice filly. And then you've just got to say Monomoy Girl. And I, you know, you said, well, some people took a stand against her. Well, I was one of them. I just kind of thought maybe the way she was drifting out in that cotillion was a sign that she was just kind of starting to show the signs of a kind of a tough campaign. They'll throw that thinking right out the window. I couldn't have been more wrong. I mean, she just ran a wonderful race, and she is a marvelous filly and was well handled throughout her year to do what she has done. Again, she's another one. I'm so impressed when a horse can put together these campaigns from early in the year to later in the year. And she started off in February at the fairgrounds for Brad Cox and still was in sharp form. This was her first race against older fillies. I mean, all of her previous races had been against her own age group, and so she stepped up and got the job done here. And finished first, and nobody ever beat her to the finish line in the entire year. The only loss was the DQ and the controversy of the cotillion at Park. So what a good job by Brad Cox there, and like I say, what a really nice filly she is.
Agreed, and the fact that she basically duplicated the Oaks performance from you know, the outside post, kind of a unique, you know, unique scenario. You touched on Jaywalk and game winner, and you mentioned the Frisette and the Champagne. Well, she did the same thing here. She ran faster than the boys.
Yep. I mean, this is a really nice filly. Heading into next year, so John Service, I mean, he's got to be just giddy looking into next year, which, you know, he was yesterday when you were talking so with him. And he's, there's another class act in my book. So, you know, that's an exciting filly for next year. I mean, she's the real deal. You know, that we talked about what a good field that was. And, you know, Restless Rider was someone that I became a fan of going clear back to that debutante. I remember talking about her on your show right after that, where she got stopped cold and then won by such a huge margin and broke the stakes record in a race that's been run over for over 100 years. Vibrance was my good price play and my Express Bet selections and didn't disappoint me by hitting the board. They say that Bellafina was in season. I mean, she certainly did not, I think, run her best race, but the jury is kind of still out on her. In terms of how good she is, we just, you know, the minute you kind of get down on her, like so many people did in the debutante, she bounced back and ran a really good race at Santa Anita, but then now she's got another disappointing one, so she's kind of been up and down. She's kind of had a roller coaster campaign at this point, so we'll see if she can be a little more consistent than she has so far. I was glad to hear Michael McCarthy say the Vibrance would be headed to the Starlet, because I would have thought that would be a good place for her, and she certainly should be a strong contender in that Starlet coming up at Los Alamitos. I'm kind of hoping to see Improbable there. They're talking about either that or the Kentucky Jockey Club for him, and I'd kind of like to see Improbable show up for that Los Alamitos fraternity that Baffert has dominated in recent years.
Well, I'm looking forward to being there again this year. And, John, you opened up the door to the question that everybody's going to have to answer in December, and that is, what's your Horse of the Year concept envision?
Well, you know, I'm going to try to be... just let kind of everything settle before I make a definitive decision. I mean, at this point, you know, I voted in the NTRA poll. I'm one of the ones voting for Justify at number one, but Justify, the majority in the poll, he got more first-place votes now in the final poll than Justify. And, you know, to me, it's like very similar to the Rachel Alexandra Zenyatta year, 2009, when you could make, you know, they were both deserving to be a Horse of the Year that year, but only one of them could get it, and it was Rachel. And, you know, I will say this, in terms of the history, not only going back to the first Horse of the Year back in the 1930s as every Triple Crown winner since the introduction of the Horse of the Year, but every Triple Crown winner has been voted Horse of the Year that year. A great example of the power of the Triple Crown was 1978, because imagine this. What if Accelerate and Justify had met not once but twice? And what if Accelerate had beaten Justify both times they met? Well, that's what happened in 1978 with Seattle Slough and Affirm, the only two times in history that two Triple Crown winners met, and they did it twice. And both times, the older 4-year-old Seattle Slough beat the 3-year-old Affirmed. But was Seattle Slough the Horse of the Year of 1978? No, it was the Triple Crown winner, Affirmed. So, like I say, imagine if Accelerate had beaten Justify twice. I mean, you would think that would be a slam dunk, that at that point you would say Accelerate would be Horse of the Year, considering that they actually met a couple of times and Accelerate beat them both times. But, you know, they didn't meet. So, I mean, I find that kind of gives an indication that I still think it's somewhat of an uphill battle here for Accelerate. But then you got to factor in there is this lingering backlash to the early retirement of Justify, and some voters may want to hold that against Justify. So I don't know how much that's going to impact the voting. You know, the Triple Crown is the most coveted thing in our game. You know, with all due respect to the Breeders' Cup Classic and the Santa Anita Handicap and the Gold Cup at Santa Anita and these other races that accelerate one of the Pacific Classic, they're all top races. They're races you want to win. But what is the number one thing a trainer, a jockey, an owner, a breeder wants to win is the Kentucky Derby, and more than that is the Triple Crown. And not only did Justify win the Triple Crown, he did so undefeated, and he made such history through that. The first horse since 1882 to win the Derby without running at two, the first Triple Crown winner in history that didn't run at two. He beat more horses in the Belmont Stakes than any Triple Crown winner had ever, you know, that big field he faced right there. I mean, he did so many things that you just had not seen before. The other thing that comes into play is the early retirement of Justify is, you know, he's kind of not in the minds of people as much as if he were running right now. So there's
good point.
Of the forgotten factor that you have to take into account. So, you know, all I can say is it's kind of a shame that one of them isn't going to get it, because Accelerate certainly has put together a Horse of the Year campaign this year. No question about it. It's better than some of the Horse of the Year campaigns for horses that were Horse of the Year. On the other hand, you've got an undefeated Triple Crown winner. So, you know, to me, they're both deserving. And as I say, right now, I would lean to Justify, but I'm going to keep an open mind and continue to look at this all the way up until I have to finally cast that vote.
Very good. I'm kind of in the same frame of mind. A couple of people have, you know, have asked and brought it up, and I can tell I'm going to need to defer on it and really kind of absorb. I answered, one question that Accelerate has a textbook classic Horse of the Year resume.
Yep.
But then there's Justify's equation and accomplishment, which is so unique and so special. This is a problematic, difficult, weird. It's a weird decision, and because the two sets of accomplishments are just so different.
Yep. Well, you look at Accelerate. He got more Grade One wins during the year, so you give him kind of, you know, that aspect. On the other hand, Justify never lost during the year, and Accelerate did have the one loss. So, you know, there is that. You know, it wasn't like he was undefeated this year. I mean, you can just go back and forth. That's the thing. You can make a compelling case for both of them, I think. And that's why, look, I won't be disappointed either way it goes, quite honestly. The only thing that I would be just slightly disappointed is I think that if Accelerate does end up being Horse of the Year, it's going to be kind of a dilute the prestige of the Triple Crown a little bit. In other words, you know, like I say, this is supposedly our holy grail, is the Triple Crown. And look, I know it was accomplished fairly recently by American Pharoah, and that's another thing that hurts Justify. I think if you did not have American Pharoah, I don't think this would be that big of a discussion. If we were breaking a 40-year drought with Justify, you know, imagine if that were the case, he'd be an overwhelming Horse of the Year choice. So I don't think it's that fair to penalize Justify just because he's coming along right behind American Pharoah. That was like Seattle Slough kind of paid that price a little bit, coming along so quickly after Secretariat and Affirmed paid that price a little bit because he was following two of them. That's when people started saying this Triple Crown so easy, maybe we ought to change it. And then when we had the 37-year drought, people were saying, this is so hard, we should change it. Well, one thing we know about the Triple Crown, it's only been done 13 times in the history of the sport. And so it's hard to do, period. And, you know, what Justify did is still mind-boggling, really.
Absolutely. It's going to be an interesting 6 weeks plus. We'll talk to John Sadler next, and I'm pretty confident John thinks that acceleration horse of the year.
Understandably.
We'll talk to John Sadler joins us next. John, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss and staring at the stars. Yeah, doesn't matter who the cost, 'cause everybody wants to be famous. I'm calling the shots, so see you over a month. Doesn't matter the cost, seems like everybody wants to. I think it could be me. The world's too small for me.
We're back at the races. And over the nearly 15 years we've been doing the show, we've had so many conversations with John Sadler after grade one wins and grade two wins and emerging maiden wins and everything else. There is no greater satisfaction that I could have doing this show than to welcome him and congratulate him on not just his first Breeders' Cup win, but the Breeders' Cup Classic win with Accelerate. John, I speak for horse players, fans, and stakeholders. Collectively, couldn't be happier for you.
Thank you very much.
I made what ended up being the best decision of the week when Tina said, where are we going to watch? And I said, let's go to the paddock. And there you were, right in the center, looking up at the screen, and I'm so glad I got to see that. That'll stay with me. That stretch run and enable, the hour before, the smile on your face. And my picture of it with Baffert congratulating you, I really am going to treasure, John. It was really special.
Well, you know, we watched Catapult on the turf race run lights out. and we watched it from there. So, like, when we saddled up in the paddock, we're doing the same thing this race. You know, I mean, they want to hurt you, but you can't see good out front in a lot of those boxes, and, you know, it's just difficult viewing. So we said, we're going to stay here. Baffert does it. He watches from there.
Yep.
We're going to stay here and watch on the big screen. And, you know, it was just, you know, you hope they don't capture it all, because I think I was screaming so loud.
Well, and I said yesterday on the show that for, I think, a lot of players, it was one of those circumstances where, you know, obviously if accelerate was the key to your plays, you were excited and you were cheering. But for those of us that might not have had him on the tickets prominently, you basically abandon your own self-interest and just start. I mean, I was screaming for Joel. I mean, like, hold them together, Joel, hold them together. And talk about what you were watching and the trip and everything that led into this, because the 14 hole, I think, ended up proving to be advantageous to a degree.
I would agree with that. You know, originally, you know, we got 14 in the room when they'd gone that day. That there's like a collective moan, you know. And then the more I got to thinking about it, I mean, if you're in the Kentucky Derby, they don't even mind being in that auxiliary gate anymore, you know, because at least you're clear. So I said, well, 14, that's all one gate. Can't be that bad. You have a quarter of a mile to the first turn. You know, I think it's going to be okay. So when he broke decent. Joel put him up in the race. We felt good, you know, into the first turn, down the backside, you know, that he was comfortable. And then the exciting, you know, you saw he was running comfortably. I said, okay, this looks real good. And then when he went into the far turn, you see him making his move for the lead. And they've gone 46 and change in front. You're going, this is really good. And that's when we went to just a screaming. And you know, I know Joel, I felt good down the lane because, one, I know this horse is a true mile and a quarter horse. You know, he's not going to be getting late. And two, I know Joel's very strong. So it was really a great thrill.
It became clear nobody was going to get to him. And I thought that when he first came on to the screen on the backstretch and you could see how easily he was traveling, that it became, you know, became very apparent that he was, you know, he was going to get the run in. What was your thought about how the pace was going to unfold in general? Because it did seem like there were as many as five horses that would, if not be on the lead, would have to adjust and find a way, you know, to stalk comfortably, and it really proved that it was you that did it the best.
Well, when you get in races that big, you know there's usually going to be some quality speed, and I didn't know whether that was going to be Mendelsohn or West Coast or a combination of all the above. So I felt good about the way the race would run, and I also felt good about our horse because, you know, he's shown that he doesn't have to come from out of the clouds. The pace is slow. He can go right up on there and still sustain his run. So, you know, we felt comfortable all the way around there. And everything went well.
And then some. And, you know, you with the win, you do a lot of things, obviously. And most notably, you know, end a period of fairly maddening frustration, because he, much like Bobby Frankel and the struggle, it took Bobby 33 starts to get that win. You know, you had any number of horses that with circumstances could have won, and none of this conversation would have taken place.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that Switch could have won, Cost of Freedom could have won, definitely Stellar Win could have won, her 3-year-old year at Keeneland. I mean, so, you know, all of that, you know, I'd already kind of internalized. It's hard when you get to a big event like this and you have maybe a lot of people that don't cover horse racing all the time and they take one storyline and run with it. But what I'm trying to do now, Steve, after the dust has settled, is, you know, tell people that look how good this horse is. Five group ones, four of them at the classic distance of a mile and a quarter, all the time being the high weight. Some of them are handicaps, giving weight away. Giving weight away at a mile and a quarter, it's a big deal. And, you know, he's just terrific. He's had a fabulous year. And I'm hoping, I didn't want my story to overshadow the real story, which is Accelerate. What a brilliant racehorse and a great campaign he's had this year.
Well, we'll talk about that and what is going to what has already begun as a fascinating exercise for the Eclipse vote. But let's also take a couple of minutes. I was delighted yesterday to have Costa join us. We had the nicest visit. Yeah, he was.
I didn't even know that. I was on a plane yesterday, flying back.
and I reached for him. Couldn't you know? And when I once we figured out that you were traveling, I got Costa on, and the sound in his voice, and you know, if you fall short, it doesn't matter. He and there and the whole family are such wonderful participants in the sport. John, talk a little bit about winning this race for him and for the Aronis family.
Oh, it's great. As I've got to know them over the years, I mean, they're the real deal. I mean, they're just solid people. They're gracious. You know, they're great losers. Obviously, everybody's a good winner. They just couldn't be better. We've developed a very good, healthy relationship where you've heard him say at times, you know, we grow the grapes and John trains the horses. So it's just they couldn't be nicer people. Stephanie was at the barn, his wife, this week, and she filled up that tack room. We could have opened a mini mart there, you know, with enough snacks and waters and Gatorades and chips and. You know, we could have fed the whole backside because she shows great empathy for my employees and just couldn't do enough. And, you know, really, really rare attributes of wonderful people. And there's a lot of people like Stephanie in this world, but, you know, they're not the ones that get the headlines. You know, everything in the news today is about something bad, or you don't hear about the wonderful things that people do on a daily basis.
That also includes Alex, his groom, and the video that Breeders' Cup caught of him cheering Accelerate down the stretch was really touching and has gotten a wide distribution.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, these guys that do the work, you know, are just the salt of the earth. I mean, they're just really great guys. You know, they don't get a lot of exposure. And a lot of them, you know, they're not even comfortable getting exposure, but they're really special people.
Some thoughts, and I know what the answer is already, but you know, how do you foresee the Accelerate versus Justify Horse of the Year discussion?
Well, I mean, that's you know, obviously, I'm going to be prejudiced. You know, you have to say that going in. And then you just have to decide what your, you know, there's no written criteria, you know, but I just think the campaign he's had has been just absolutely AAA. And, you know, I think he's a great horse this year. And but on the other hand, an undefeated Triple Crown winner is an undefeated Triple Crown winner. So not to tell you how special that is. So that's for somebody else to figure out. And you know, I'm not going to say anything bad about anybody else or anything like that. I just think, you know, we have a very deserving horse, and you know, the sports writers can figure that out.
Well, you look at this campaign and the 7 starts, 6 wins, only the second to the Dirt Mile winner, City of Light at Oaklawn. He had nothing but triple-digit buyers, including three 110s or above. I mean, it is, John, it's an impeccable Horse of the Year resume. I mean, that's just that's just a reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, on any given year, if these two horses were in different years, then they're, you know, getting 99% of the vote, either one of them. You know, say it was last year and this year. I mean, so, but I mean, that's just the way it is. But he's had an impeccable year, and And you know, what's impressive too is that, you know, he didn't get to save any ground in the Classic, which was smart by Rosario. He kept him wide and kept him in the clear, which is what you're supposed to do with the best horse. So you know, I couldn't be more proud of him and my people and every, you know, the whole thing's a win-win.
Did you feel that the criticism or the concerns about his performance in the Awesome Again was a little picayune? I mean, there was a school of thought that said, oh, West Coast is going to move forward off that race, but that it wasn't the great prep for Accelerate.
Well, I mean, I didn't really listen too much to that because, you know, I'm on the inside and I know. If you looked at the Awesome Again, you go back and watch that. They floated him about 10 wide on the first turn. He got off to a worse than normal start. All things considered, it was, in my mind, it was a good prep because when he hit the wire at a mile and an eighth, he was just getting going. So, I was happy with the prep and, you know, I didn't really, if they didn't like it or whatever, that's fine, you know, but it was a prep the year before. You know, he had no prep, and that didn't work out well. And I think not because it wasn't the plan was wrong, came out with a quarter crack. But we chose a different path this year, and so I was, you know, I didn't put much stock in that personally.
Well, about as satisfying a conclusion as you could possibly hope for. I mean, Selcourt, if we run through the day quickly, you know, Selcourt's hand was forced being inside, and, I mean, they just went crazy fast. I mean, that was nothing you could do. You know, I suppose Catalina's performance was maybe the one head-scratcher.
For sure. We're going to do some tests on him today. He's going to go in a Nuke scan tomorrow. He needs to be evaluated. It's so fresh this morning, I haven't even put my hands on him yet today. So we're going to figure that one out. That was the one that we still don't have the answers for. But, you know, we'll find out. And I know he's a top horse, and I expect him to be a top horse next year. So more to come on that.
Well, and then you mentioned Catapult, and you were clearly thrilled with Catapult's effort, and it was part of a big showcase of Drayden Van Dyke's talents over the 2 days.
Yeah, we were thrilled with Catapult because, one, we were doing something that we didn't normally do. We let him settle a little bit more at Del Mar and kick at the end, but when we were watching the races over a 2-day period, Friday and Saturday, with that amount of water in that turf course, the horses weren't coming from way, way back. So I said, Drayden, I want you to go up a little closer because I think he's fairly versatile. Didn't look like there was that much speed in there. And that being said, I don't think this was his best turf course because I think he wants a firmer course like Gulfstream. for him to run that well and adjust to the conditions, I was really impressed because I think he wants a firmer turf. If I got to choose, what turf would you want for him? I would say a firmer turf, no doubt. And, you know, he ran really well considering the circumstances. And if you were there, I don't know what day you came in, but when it started to rain Wednesday into Thursday, it was a very soaking kind of rain.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily hard, but the kind that it never really stopped. And that was a... You saw where those horses were on the turf, a lot of them, you know. I don't think any of them were on the inside. Maybe in the sprint, the horse is two or three off. But, you know, so it was a pretty tricky turf. And for him to run that well was just a really credit to what a good horse he is.
Well, and obviously the tipping your hand that the new Pegasus turf race is on the agenda.
Yeah.
Well, John, this was a wonderful turn of events, and for those keeping score at home, John is in the money more than 25% in the Breeders' Cup. 1-4-7, 4 seconds and 7/3, and Accelerate's win. So you got a terrific Breeders' Cup record.
Like I said, that's in the rearview mirror 2 days out. We're looking for next year. We know it's out here next year. And the fun part of it is, you know, who will be there next year? And, you know, as things develop, you just don't know. but that keeps you what going with horses. Even if you don't win, you have some others coming along. I heard one owner said, you know, one time that this is my health insurance. You know, you have something to get up and look forward to, and looking down the road, you don't know, in horse racing, you don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, the other thing that also I'd wanted to say is that a lot of times, you know, you get there a lot. I mean, that says a lot. I mean, what would you think about Andy Reid as an NFL coach, widely regarded as one of the top two or three? You know, went to a Super Bowl with Philadelphia, didn't win. Looks like he'll be going back to one this year, maybe with the Kansas City Chiefs. But, you know, when you're competing at this level and you're right up there, I mean, you know, it's crazy good.
Well, and for you to improve, this horse over the period of time, that and bring him to three straight Breeders' Cups. For those that forget, I mean, he was third in the mile in 16 and ninth last year. And to keep a horse sound and to keep a horse together and move him forward, it says a lot. I mean, you took this horse, you took a catapult. I mean, how many people are able to take a horse that Chad Brown has been training and either maintain or improve him? And you've done that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I don't hate my own work.
That's a great line.
Hey, I've got one more set to go out.
Get out. Go get it, John. I couldn't wait.
Thanks. I hope Coast is listening. Take care. Bye.
John Sadler, everybody, and back at Santa Anita and working, right? Of course. And I was looking forward so much to that conversation. And I guess we'll stay here and close out this second day. We've got plenty more to do. We've got Baffert to get to, and Mark Cassie and Todd Pletcher and who else? Brad Cox. And I want to get to the Europeans too. And of course, tomorrow we've also got I think Nicole Russo stopping by, Sid Fernando, Pete Fornital. But got to get some of the sales specifics in. We'll get Nicole's thoughts on the first. Now we'll have 2 days worth of Keeneland sale will be in the books, and the Sunday night action. But you know, the demand for premium bloodstock really at a fever pitch. Conversation at a fever pitch, obviously, today on Election Day, and hard for me not to share some thoughts. And last week, as I drove last Saturday, as I drove to Louisville, I had stayed Friday night in Erie and made the second half of the drive on Saturday morning. The story out of Pittsburgh started to emerge. And I made a conscious effort, particularly Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday last week, to avoid the topic, and it was not easy, but I didn't want it to interfere with the task at hand, which was bringing everybody the best possible information to help with their Breeders' Cup strategies. But in addition to what was from a personal standpoint, very upsetting, the attack in Pittsburgh on the heels of a couple of other ethnocentric attacks, it hits home. My father left Vienna in 1939 with his mother to come to the United States. And they were scurrying to get to somewhere, to get to the UK, to get to Shanghai, or the US. My grandmother's one relative went to Brazil, actually, Uncle Carl. But my father had an uncle here in Brooklyn, Uncle Ike, and at the last minute they were able to get visas and come to the United States. My father's sister, not so lucky, and was caught trying to get to Palestine. She was 16, and she married her boyfriend of 17, and they led a troop transport, not a troop transport, but a transport of children that were given over to them by desperate parents to try to get out of Europe. And the Nazis killed them in 1943. So to have a temple like Tree of Life, which just as easily could have been Temple Beth Shalom in Manchester, Connecticut, to have it attacked in this way, absolutely is a something that would shake, I would think, if you were in my you know, my shoes, and you grew up with a refugee that my father was, and his mother. And that's one of the reasons we're playing those ads from Hias, whose work is courageous and exemplary. On Monday, I went out for dinner, and I had been in a very dark mood, and it was darkened further because I drove by the Porter Funeral Home on Bardstown Road, where hundreds of people were lined up paying respects to Maurice Stollard and his family, the gentleman that was killed at the Kroger, along with Vicki Jones. I find the situation in this country so upsetting, and whether it was Emanuel Charleston or Tree of Life or these innocent grandparents at the Kroger, or the addressees of pipe bombs, I find it just very upsetting that this country in 2018 is dealing with this kind of activity and the race baiting, the xenophobia, the obvious anti-Semitic tropes, the serial misrepresentation of minorities, the disgusting misogyny is just, there's got to be fought back against, and I hope that happens today nationwide. And we'll wish Stuart Pittman luck in Anne Arundel and J.D. Schulten in the Iowa 4th District and everywhere else that decency can prevail today. Get to the polls.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hias has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who
who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.